Thanks, Isabel. Thanks, Sam. Good morning. It's good to be here, to have the opportunity to reflect on God's word together. And this morning we're thinking about the importance of relationship. Because one of the things that seems to be built into the core of being a human being is the need for, the desire for relationship. I wonder what you think of that statement that I've just made. Do you agree with it? Do you think it is so obvious that it doesn't need to be said? Do you think that actually you much prefer to be alone? How do you respond to that idea that the desire, the need for relationship is so important? And I know that there are different personality types, with some people finding being in large groups of people much easier and more stimulating than others. But in general, most people seem to value relationships of some form or another and find them important. People live in families where relationship is key. People live single lives, but normally enjoy lots of important relationships with friends. And we even go so far as to deprive people of human contact as a form of punishment when we put them into solitary confinement. Relationship is important. And one of the things that we've all lived through in various levels of distress and uncomfort, if that's a word, was during lockdown, where we had that, we just were not able to meet up with friends and family, and we came up with lots of clever ways of substituting that as we were reminded of the importance of relationship. I remember a time when I was on a business trip to America, to one of their major cities. It was so memorable, I forget which one it was. And it was late in the evening, and I was on my 10th floor hotel room. I looked out over the city, and there were lights everywhere. Cars were driving around, restaurants were open, people were meeting up with friends, going to the theater. They were having a good time. And it struck me that none of the millions of the people in that city, apart from some hotel staff, knew I was there or cared that I was there. And in that moment, I felt alone and it hurt. But I've got over it. And when we look at the biblical story, we should not be surprised about the importance of relationship. Genesis 1 tells us that God made us in his image. And so in some way, we take on some of his characteristics. And God himself has lived in relationship as Father, Son, and Spirit since before the universe and time were created. And so it should be no surprise that we, created in his image, are relational beings as well. And so we often talk of churches like ours as being a family. Isabel reminded us of that a few moments ago. And it's an idea that is drawn from the biblical story. It speaks of that importance of relationship, where we love each other, where we are interested in each other, where we care for each other, where we support each other. And as Will reminded us last week, we also get involved in the mission that Jesus calls us to do together in relationship. He used that phrase, this is not a solo operation. It is in general something that we do as groups, as teams, in relationship with each other. Yes, it is important as individuals to take that time to talk to others about Jesus. But so often we find it helpful and useful and easier to do it together. And that's what we're going to be thinking about this morning. Firstly, by looking at the example of Jesus and his followers. It's always good to do that, to go back and look how Jesus did this, as how he modeled that, how he showed this at work in his life and in the lives of his followers. And then we're going to think about how that example can guide and inform us as we think about how to live for and what we do for Jesus today. And as we look at some of how Jesus and his followers lived and worked, try and put yourself in their situation. If you'd been part of that group, maybe that group of 12 people that went around with Jesus, how would you have found it? Would it have been exciting? Would it have been fulfilling? Would you have struggled with it in some way? What would it have been life like for you? A couple of weeks ago, Andy Lewis was drawing some insights from the story of a woman who lived in a town in Samaria, who met and whose life was transformed by Jesus. And early in that story, we find the simple statement in John 4, verse 8, that his disciples, the followers of Jesus, had gone into the town to buy food. It's a practical thing, a reminder that they, just like all of us, had to cope with the necessities of life. And Jesus and his followers would have spent a lot of time traveling from town to town. And I'm sure that on those journeys, they would have just enjoyed the opportunity of being together, of getting to know each other, of sharing stories, of doing life together. And if you look at the makeup of that group, they were very, very different people. There would have been lots of things that would have rubbed against each other, where they just wouldn't have got on and seen things in the same way. But they learned to get through that and to work out what it meant to live in relationship as they followed Jesus and how they could work together in spite of, or maybe enabled by, their differences. They would have eaten meals together. They would have slept out under the stars. They would have been there for each other if one of them had been taken ill. They would have supported each other if they received difficult or sad news from home. So important in terms of building relationship and enjoying each other's company. And then sometimes these very practical domestic moments turned into something much more, into teaching opportunities for Jesus. As Sam read to us a few moments ago, there was one occasion on a Sabbath day, a day of rest, where Jesus and his followers were walking through some grain fields, and his followers started to pick some heads of grain to eat. Now, this in itself might seem a strange practice to us. It's a bit like stealing something that doesn't belong to you or scrumping apples. Do people still do that? It's a thing, I understand. And depriving the farmer of the benefits of all his work. But different cultures seem to treat this differently. I remember on a trip to Ukraine, in much happier times for that country, and it was great to pray for them earlier. Let's continue to do that. But I remember on a trip, I went to visit someone in their house. And there was a group of us, and they had a large garden with lots of things growing, most of which I didn't even recognize. But the person who'd taken us there, our sort of host, who'd taken us to visit this particular person, he was just walking around the garden, looking at what he wanted, and picking it and eating it. And it just seemed so strange to me. There was no sense of asking permission. It was just the assumption that this was okay. And the person who lived there seemed to be fine with it as well. It was just what they did. And it was one of the things that had been specifically allowed for when God gave a set of laws to his people. In Deuteronomy 23:25, we read these words. If you enter your neighbor's cornfield, you may pick the ears with your hands. But you must not put a sickle to their standing corn. You can go and have a bit for yourself, but you can't harvest it and make bread, is basically the message here. But as Heather was sharing a few weeks ago, there were a lot of laws that had grown up around the Sabbath, including not being allowed to reap a harvest. And this is what some Pharisees, who saw what was going on, accused Jesus of letting his followers do. Look, they say, to Jesus. Why are they doing what is unlawful? And Jesus is ready to turn this relaxed moment with his friends, walking through a field, having a bit of grain to eat, to turn that into a teaching opportunity as he engages with these religious leaders and outlines some key principles about Sabbath and how it should be observed. It was natural. It grew out of what was happening at the moment. As people saw what was going on within the family, and wanted to engage with it. And I think there's a great principle there, that as we spend time together as a family of God's people in different size groups doing various things together, people can see that there is something strange, I was going to say, something difficult, different about us. And they can want to know something about what we have and what is going on and why we behave like we do. And there are opportunities to engage in conversation. So I think for these early followers of Jesus, there were some really great opportunities just to spend time with him, to learn from him, and to experience something of being in relationship with him. But there was more. As well as the privilege of just doing that sort of thing, there were moments when those early followers of Jesus were stretched and challenged to grow, to develop, to become more like him, the person they had chosen to follow. And we see some great examples of this in Matthew's gospel. We're just going to look at a few this morning. Matthew 5, at the beginning of Matthew 5, Jesus sees a crowd of people. A lot of people had come to hear him and to see what was going on. And he went up on a mountainside. He sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. And these words introduce a concentrated block of teaching that goes on for the next three chapters in Matthew. It's powerful. It's challenging. It's radical. As Jesus outlines some of what it really means to follow him. And those listening to him would have been left in no doubt that really taking on board that all that Jesus expected of them would change their lives forever. It's not just an internal change that Jesus is looking for. The way we think about ourselves, the way we live together as a church family. He's also looking for this to spill out into the rest of the world as we change the way we live and as we bring his light, his goodness, to those around us. And so in chapter 5, 14 to 16, he speaks about his followers being the light of the world. Not that you need to work out, to practice, to develop, to grow so that you become the light of the world, but that you are the light of the world. And he encourages them to shine that light into the darkness around them. Have you ever thought that as followers of Jesus, he would say to you, you are the light of the world. We live in a dark place. And God has called people like us to shine his light into the darkness. The light that John 1 tells us will never be put out, never be overcome. And we are the people through whom that is to be channeled in the world. This is what Jesus calls his followers to do. A little later in that chapter, he calls them to love their enemies and to pray for those who are persecuting them. How counterintuitive, how difficult. And we see Jesus modeling that himself when soldiers are nailing him to a cross. In chapter 6, he calls on them to be forgiving people, willingly forgiving those who harm and hurt them. When our natural reaction is probably something different. In chapter 7, he calls them to not live judgmental lives and to avoid pointing out minor failings in the lives of others. I'd encourage you to read those chapters, but there's a health warning. It affects your life. If you take on board what it says and allow it to sink in and to change who you are. Because following Jesus fully results in a dramatic and total change in how we treat each other and how we treat those who are not currently part of the church community. But then as part of doing life together, these followers gain a deeper appreciation of who Jesus is, as we see in this next example. In Matthew 8, verse 26, Jesus is speaking to them and says, "You of little faith, why are you so afraid?" Then he got up, he rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was calm. Now, the context for this story is that Jesus and his followers are in a boat to cross over a lake, something that many of them would have done many times before. But on this occasion, a furious storm blew up. It's a lake that's surrounded by a lot of hills, a lot of sort of low mountains, and there's valleys between them, and the wind sometimes comes through those valleys and produces a great storm on the lake. And this is what was happening. And it was so bad that the followers of Jesus, many of whom were seasoned, experienced fishermen on that lake, were concerned that the boat was going to sink and they were going to drown. Jesus gets up. He speaks words of power. He calms the storm. And the followers of Jesus are left wondering what sort of person Jesus really was. Who is this man? A moment in the middle of life where suddenly there is a step change in their understanding of Jesus as their witness, in this case, his power over creation. And those moments are wonderful when we get that deeper appreciation of Jesus. We see him in a way we've never seen before. We see something about his character and his greatness and his love and his mercy. And we think, that is amazing. That is wonderful. And it encourages us to grow deeper into our relationship with him, to trust him more as we realize more of who he is. As Will was reminding us last week, there was a time when Jesus sent 72 of his followers out on an extended mission trip. And as Will was reflecting on that, he talked about a previous time when Jesus had sent out his 12 closest followers on a similar mission. And we see this in Matthew 10. Jesus called his 12 disciples to him, and he gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. He gives them that power. He gives them that authority. But it's not so that they can just rest and relax in that and enjoy that for themselves. But along with that, he gives them a job to do. He gives them a wonderful commission. Matthew 10, 7, 8, Jesus says, "As you go, proclaim this message. The kingdom of heaven has come near." We sang earlier about that idea of Jesus bringing the kingdom down to earth. And that's what Jesus is talking about here and telling his followers to go and proclaim that something is different, something has changed. The earth is different because Jesus has brought his kingdom, God's kingdom, down to this planet. And because of that, he gives them power to heal those who are ill, to raise the dead, to cleanse those who have leprosy, to drive out demons. And they do that in the realization that they have received freely many, many great things from Jesus, and they are to freely give. And they went out from that safe place of relationship and family, in a small family group, in total confidence in the one who was sending them out, and with those that they were going with. They knew that the person who was walking next to them would support them in what they were doing. Yes, they knew that Jesus was there for them, but he'd sent them out. He'd given them what they needed, and he'd sent them. And he was no longer actually physically present with them, but their friends, the people they had spent time with, were with them. And they had confidence in them as well. Confidence built through time spent together and many shared experiences where they'd seen wonderful things happening through the power and love of Jesus. Must have been a stretching, a special moment. But they're also privileged to just work alongside Jesus in the engagements he has with people. Sometimes he sends them out, sometimes he works with them. One example is when Jesus looks at a large crowd and he chooses to feed them miraculously with just 5 bread rolls and 2 small fish. The disciples understandably didn't really think this small amount would provide what was needed, but Jesus had other ideas. And he tells the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and he broke the loaves. He gave them to disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. As well as witnessing up close the power of Jesus in taking 5 loaves and 2 small fish and multiplying that into enough to feed a vast multitude, as well as seeing that at work, the disciples are fully involved in what is going on. They receive the food from Jesus. They pass it out among the crowd. So living life together, soaking up the teaching of Jesus, being sent out by Jesus, seeing the power of Jesus at work, being involved in the work Jesus is doing. This was the daily experience of these first followers of Jesus. Must have been exhausting. Must have been exciting. Must have been hectic. Must have been rewarding. Although I'm sure there are many times when they did not know what was going to happen next. And when I read those stories and look at some of those experiences, it's something that excites me, encourages me, gives me a deeper insight into what it means to follow Jesus. But how does that map to our situation today? How can we experience something like this in a totally different culture, with different demands on our time, different expectations of us? And I actually think we can do it in a very similar way, with groups meeting together with a focus on Jesus, with groups doing life together and being prepared to go out into the world and do what Jesus is calling them to do. I think so many of the principles still apply. Yes, Jesus is not physically present in the world. He's gone back to heaven after he died on the cross, after he was restored to life. He is back in heaven with his Father. But before he went, he said to his followers he would send them his Spirit to enable them and to fill them and to enable them to do all the things that he was calling them to do. So we still have God's presence within us. And so I think we can do things in a very similar way. And we've seen part of this operating in small groups or house groups, and they're called different things in different places, for many years. As people come together to grow in their understanding of Jesus, as they come together to pray together and to share what is going on in their lives. But recently, and really excitingly, we have seen this develop as some of these groups explored being more outward looking, actually recognizing some of the reality of what it means to be missionary disciples and to say, yes, it's great to learn and to grow and to develop in relationship with God and relationship with each other, and that is so vitally important. But that needs to spill out into our community. And so some of these groups are starting to meet in public places, in coffee shops and parks, getting involved in social actions such as litter picking. It's a great opportunity to speak with people they meet. We see this in the way the Alpha team operates, where they meet up an hour before the Alpha session starts to share together, to pray together, to plan together. We see this in the Super Sunday missional community, where people come together with a desire to build relationship, to include others into that community, and to find ways of exploring what it means to follow Jesus. We are starting to see it in the Friendship Hub that meets on Fridays, as people come together to share, to enjoy doing things together, and where there are opportunities to speak about what it means to follow Jesus. And there are so many opportunities. As people just meet together in friendship groups during the week, they meet up for a coffee, they chat, they walk the dog together. Opportunities to include in those times a focus on Jesus and what he is calling them to do together. Sometimes it doesn't just happen by accident. We've got to be intentional about it. But what a great intention to have. I don't know what would work best for each of you. But I do know that each of us here this morning who are followers of Jesus are called to be part of this. To be part of living in relationship with Jesus, to be living in relationship with others who share that faith and love of Jesus, and to sharing that with the wider world. So I would encourage you to think and to pray about what that would look like for you. What sort of group it would make sense for you to be part of, so you could be part of this amazing explosion of seeking to share Jesus with others. And if you are already part of a group, to continue to explore new ways of doing life together and being a light for Jesus in the communities in which you live. What we can each do is amazing. What we can do together is amazing. So, a question to think about. What can we do, each of us, to increase the way we live out the gospel together so that it changes and transforms our own lives, the communities we are part of, and the town in which we live? What does that look like for you in your workplace, in your street, in your coffee shop gatherings with friends, in the social groups that you are part of? What does that look like? How can we take those opportunities to communicate something of the light and love of Jesus? I'm going to pray for a minute. I'm going to ask a couple of people to come and share something of their experience of doing this, so we can just get some insight into some of what I've been describing. Father,